Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hey, it's Tony Bruschi. When you're not listening to this podcast, be sure to check out one of our others, like this one, The Grave Talks. Every week, I talk with individuals who've been affected quite intimately and personally by the supernatural. We hear their stories one-on-one in our conversations. In fact, here's a 15-minute preview of one of this week's two new episodes of The Grave Talks. And if you like it, just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe. Today on The Grave Talks, Dissecting the Dead, a conversation with Elliot Van Dusen. Since childhood, Elliot Van Dusen has been fascinated by the supernatural and law enforcement. He earned a Bachelor's of Arts in Criminology from St. Mary's University. Having served the Royal Canadian Mounted Police for 15 years, he retired as a corporal. Over the course of his career, he specialized in major crimes, including homicide, sex crimes, and drug enforcement. Today, he serves as the director of the Paranormal Phenomena Research and Investigation Team. We learn about his research and experiences with the paranormal on The Grave Talks.
For me, looking back at things, the first memory I have of being interested in the paranormal was the television show Unsolved Mysteries. And it was two reasons for that. One, I always wanted to be a police officer, so I found the homicide cold cases that Unsolved Mysteries would show very interesting. But then every once in a while, they'd talk about a ghost file or a UFO file or even a cryptid file. And that, too, also fascinated me. And so I watched that show religiously. And then I think in about 1997, I discovered the X-Files TV show. And that had come out in 1993, but I didn't find out about it until 97. And I thought it was really cool. It had two law enforcement officers investigating the paranormal. So I decided to start my own kind of research organization to look into anything paranormal and unexplained. And then we moved to Halifax, Nova Scotia, from Sydney, Nova Scotia, which is about 5 hours away, back in 1998. And my mother had come to me with a newspaper article talking about a gentleman at the Nova Scotia Community College that was teaching parapsychology. So I went on their website and saw that they offered two different courses and signed up for them both. And the instructor would later become my mentor in parapsychology, and it's Dr. Daryl Walsh, who's also part of my organization that I still run today, which is called Paranormal Phenomena Research and Investigation. Mm-hmm. And once I completed those two courses, of course, my interest in the subject never really waned. So I continued to seek out other sort of educational opportunities that were available at the time. And at the time, there wasn't really much available for parapsychology education, but I ended up taking a diploma program through the Stratford Career Institute out of Toronto, Ontario. And then, of course, I went to St. Mary's University, where I studied criminology, which is a mix basically of sociology and psychology. Mm-hmm. Then I got recruited by the RCMP. So I kind of did the opposite of what Fox Mulder did, where he went from kind of behavioral sciences to the paranormal, whereas I had gone from the paranormal into the RCMP doing law enforcement. And I did 15 years. I just retired May 2020. And I spent 8 of those 15 years doing major crimes, behavioral science, homicide type work. But I also continue to kind of do the paranormal from the side of my desk, I guess. Mm-hmm. I tried to take a few more courses, and eventually I took a degree program while I was a police officer. And I learned very quickly you don't talk about the paranormal in law enforcement. At least that was my experience. I have talked to a few police officers that have had the opposite experience, but much like Fox Mulder did in the television show, I received a lot of ridicule for being interested in the subject. So I pursued it quietly. And then about a couple years before I retired, I knew I was getting ready to probably medical out. of the Royal Canadian Man of Police. And I started to do the odd podcast here and there. And then I had a huge file I worked on in Rhode Island, haunting. And I wrote a book on it and started to come back out and out of the closet, so to speak. And then once I was back out there and I retired from the RCMP, now this is pretty much all that I do, you know, because I'm on pension and I have the fortunate opportunity to just kind of work at this at my own time and at my own leisure and do as much of it that I want now.
Sure. When you were in the Mounted Police before you retired, what sort of experience, did you have any experiences in that capacity as essentially a police officer?
Not as a police officer. Before I joined the RCMP, we had my organization had investigated a haunted house in Kentville, Nova Scotia. Mm-hmm. It was built in the 1800s, and a couple had just bought it and moved in. They had only lived there for about 6 months. And they had reported a few different things, which is what piqued my curiosity. So one, they said that they would see an apparition of a female walk down the main stairwells, kind of like a split entry home. They had a dog pass away, and they started seeing the spirit of the dog in the house, especially in their bedroom. They thought they were seeing faces in photographs, which I'll get to in a minute. And they also had pennies that were materializing in the house on their own. So there's a lot of activity going on. So I was certainly interested. So I put together a team of about five of us and we went down and, of course we get there and we scan the house and it's clean. And they showed us the jar where they collect all the pennies, but I mean, it wasn't anything impressive, you know, it just looked like a change jar that someone was saving up, up their change with. But we checked, you know, the kitchen and the living room in the house, and there was no pennies laying around, no loose change. And as the evening would go on, we would take our base readings with the electromagnetic field radiation detector, which is used to, you know, check the wiring in the house to make sure that there's no unshielded wires or dangerous levels of radiation leaking out of them. And by the stairwell where they used to see the female apparition come down, we were getting quite a high reading there. And it was pretty consistent. And then around 3 a.m, I had an investigator that was checking the camera in the kitchen dining room area about once every hour, just to make sure the tape was still good and batteries were still good. And sure enough, at 3 a.m, around there, he had found a penny at the base of the tripod that had appeared. And where the camera was situated at, there was only one way in, one way out. And the entire investigative team was sitting in the living room, which was the only way in and out. And so nobody else in the household had, you know, come in through there. None of my investigators had gone in through there except for the guy that was checking the equipment. And you could hear everything on the audio. So, you know, you could kind of hear our conversation in the background. And then when he would go check the equipment, you could hear his footsteps really clearly on the tape. Mm-hmm. But at no time do you hear any metal hit the floor or anyone shuffling around or anything like that. And of course, right where the penny was at the base of the tripod was outside of the camera lens's view. So you don't actually see anything on there. And that's kind of all that happened that night, which was, you know, really interesting. So we got these high EMF readings and we have a penny that, you know, appeared that we couldn't explain. So we asked if we could come back a second night and she said, sure. And so we came back a second night. I brought a bigger team this time, about 10 of us. So we had most of the team inside and we had two guys outside with night vision on the house as well. So when we were in the house, again, we started getting those high EMF readings near the stairwell. So one of my investigators had the idea to turn off the power to the house. So we asked the homeowners if we could just kind of go down to the breaker box and turn off the master power switch, and they were okay with that. And once that was done, the EMF readings near the stairwell stopped. So he turned the power back on, and of course, the EMF readings started up again. Mm-hmm. So he asked me to kind of stomp my foot where I was standing. So I did that, and he kind of followed the noise and the wiring and the electrical underneath the main floor. And he found basically unshielded wires because the home was built in the 1800s. So that kind of explained why we were getting that constant, consistent high EMF reading. So we let the homeowners know, because that might be something you want to get fixed.
Sure.
So an electrical fire breaks out. But so I was kind of like, I was like, you know, I mean, that's kind of good. Even though it wasn't paranormal, we kind of solved one mystery. And then all of a sudden, about halfway through the night, we got a radio call from one of our guys outside, and they asked if there was anybody upstairs in the house. And we said no. We were all downstairs at the time. And he was kind of panicked, sounded like he was panicking. And he said he was going to go upstairs and check it out, because him and the other investigator outside thought that they had seen somebody in an upstairs bedroom.
Sure.
And so he went upstairs, and when he opened the bedroom door, he said that there was a female apparition of a little girl sitting on the bed where they had seen movement in the window. And he froze and was terrified, and eventually got on the radio and yelled for us to come upstairs. And by the time we all got upstairs, there's about six of us in the room, I think, at the time. The apparition had disappeared, so the only one that had seen it was my investigator, Adam. And we put the EMF reader on the bed, and we were still kind of getting sporadic spikes on the EMF, which was interesting, because it wasn't near any outlets or anything like that. It was right in the middle of the room, yet it was detecting, you know, electromagnetic energy.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of felt drawn to the closet. I couldn't explain it. We all just kind of were staring at this closet door that was shut. And one of the investigators opened it up. And as soon as he opened it up, all six of us in the room immediately felt like this ice cold. And I policed up in the Arctic for 5 years. It was even colder than that. So colder than like minus 60 degrees Celsius. Go right through us. Like, it felt like it went like right through our chest, and it kind of took your breath away. Mm-hmm. And then the coldness just kind of dissipated. And we had a reverend on our team at the time. So he just kind of said like a non-denominational prayer type thing. And then the room kind of felt like it was at peace. And the EMF reader stopped buzzing. And the cold spot had dissipated. And that's all the activity that kind of happened at that house. We were able to solve the photograph issue later on with the faces in the photograph. So what it was because it was this old 18th century home or 19th century home with those nice wooden door frames with the high gloss on it.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever they would take pictures, it was basically visual pareidolia, which is when your mind tries to look for a face. So same as if you look up at the clouds long enough, you'll eventually, you know, see Mickey Mouse up in the clouds, or you'll see a knight in shining armor, or whatever your mind wants to kind of lead you to believe.
Mm-hmm.
That's what was happening with the photographs. But we still could not explain Adam seeing the apparition or the penny. So there was no doubt in my mind that that house was haunted. And that was my first, I would say that was my first experience with the paranormal. And that was just before I had joined the police force, probably about 2 years before.
So, I mean, after having that experience, I mean, did you accept it right away that this was a paranormal experience? Were you trying to, obviously you did do some research to try and figure out what's, you know, what is logical here? What is just our bodies and brains doing their thing? But was it difficult to accept that, you know, you just had an experience?
I think for some of the investigators, it was. For me, I've always been a believer. I'm definitely a lot more critical now, you know, fast forwarding. I've been doing the, you know, paranormal research and investigation now for 25 years.
Sure.
So the longer and the older I get, I find the more like critical I get, especially after being in the police force. But at the time, those two things sat okay with me.
Mm-hmm.
I had read other literature that pennies in particular show up at certain haunted houses, but other people have reported other coins materializing as well. We had a poltergeist case here in Nova Scotia back in the 1800s that the Society for Psychical Research, the American Society for Psychical Research, had investigated in Windsor, Nova Scotia. And they had foreign coins like coming from Europe that were materializing over there. So that part wasn't uncommon. And then, of course, you know, the investigator seeing the apparition as well.
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's two brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. To hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe or visit thegravetalks.com.